dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, SIPs, SIPs. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
It can think for itself. Strike fear in the hearts of hackers. And laugh in the face of disaster. It can transform itself. Grow into whatever the future demands. Work virtually anywhere, and propel entire companies, industries, and economies forward. Can your network do this? It can if it's designed by the world's networking company, AT&T.
Okay, now we're finally recording. I don't know what happened there, but I am Stank Dog with you once again this week, and you are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 37. Coming to you, originally aired on March 16th, 2004. And the opening that you just heard, just before me, was an introduction, a WAV file that was sent to me, actually an MP3 file sent to me from Nick84, one of our good friends. Nick84, who picked that up, he gave me a link to the website, which we'll put in the notes. That was a little ad for AT&T networking, and had a little mention, a little jab at hackers, and I thought that would be a good way to open the show, to show that they are selling fear, they are using the name of hackers to, you know, put that out there because they know the mindset of people when they hear the word hacker and stuff like that. So I just thought that would be fun to open. I'm not going to dig into it or analyze it or bash it too much, just thought it would be interesting to mention. And it's probably also interesting to mention that I have a new first-time co-host with us this week. So welcome to you, my friend. Zero DB is in the house.
Hello, hackers.
That's right, and we are going to, we've had a couple long housekeeping sections lately because we had a lot of emails, but this week is exactly the opposite of that. We have nothing. We don't have follow-ups. We don't have emails to talk about this time, so we're just going to go right into the show and tell portion of the show because, and that's actually one of the reasons that I have Zero DB on the show with me, because we've been working on some projects together lately. One in particular that he's going to talk about in a moment, and I've been working on quite a bit this week, too. First of all, I had mentioned before, that I think I mentioned on the show anyway, that I ordered some back issues of Blacklisted 411 magazine. Now, for those of you who don't remember or aren't familiar with it, Blacklisted411.net, does that sound right?
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I think it's Blacklisted411.net. You can go there. This is a hacking magazine from, I remember it, in the mid-90s that I first saw it. And I picked up just a couple issues of it. It was kind of hard to find, kind of tough to find. And it was very similar format to 2600 magazine. It was, it says on the front, quote, the official hackers magazine, for whatever that's worth. I don't know who the official governing body that gave them that notification was or that denotation. But anyway, similar in format and style to 2600. I found generally it was more phone-oriented, more of a freaker's magazine than hacking, but that's, you know, they kind of go hand-in-hand, so that's not a big deal. But they were around back in the mid-90s that I remember, but they're really tough to find. They were carried by Barnes & Nobles and some other stuff that I remember, but they just seem to disappear off the face of the earth. Well, they're back now, and they have a current issue out at the website I mentioned earlier. And you can go and order the current issue and subscribe future issues and stuff like that. I haven't gotten the current or new issue yet. I've ordered it, but I haven't gotten it yet. So I don't know if... Well, we'll not pull any punches here. I don't know if they're any good. I have no idea. I haven't read it yet, so I'm not going to diss them. I don't know if it's good. It may be fantastic. I don't know. So once I get it, of course, we'll talk about it and see if anybody else has any experience or has read it. But what I did do is I have some of the back issues that I had saved from when they were out years ago, and I had some gaps in there. Like I said, it was tough to find. So I ordered some back issues from their site. Now, they don't have them all available, but I was able to fill in some of the gaps. I think I ordered 5 or 6 issues, I'm not sure, of some of the ones that I was missing. And I'm still missing a few more, and maybe they'll put those up later as well. And like I said, I went ahead and ordered the current one. I just haven't gotten it yet. But I wanted to talk about this particular one. I started reading them, and the first one I started reading here is Volume 2, Issue 1. It is January 1995. And I said I wasn't going to diss them, but I have to, because this was just downright horrible. I mean, it really was bad. It was just... I don't know. This... Now, I'll give them some. They started off, according to their website, they started off as an online zine. And that's really what this issue felt like to me. It felt like one of the online zines you would read, and they just printed it out into a magazine format. So, I don't know, it has some good photography in it. And like I said, it's very much freak-related, in my opinion, most of the stuff I read. So there's a lot of phone numbers. There's some good pictures of different phone company and employees, and there's a van... I'm not sure which company here, but a phone company van and a guy working on a box on the side of the road here. But it's actually the content of the magazine, of this particular issue, I thought was just not there. It was almost non-existent. It was filled with ads, first of all. Absolutely filled with tons and tons of ads, marketplace ads, just... all kinds of junk. It's looks like it's 60 pages counting the front and back cover and everything. And I would say probably 20 or more of that was ads. So it's like, you know, basically 40 pages of content.
I guess you gotta pay the provider.
Yeah, I guess so, but see, we don't do that. In Binary Revolution, we don't do that. We don't have ads in there. Or if we do, it's for people we like and support, and we're not charging anybody for it or anything. See, that just adds the possibility of bias into the whole situation, and we want to avoid that. Of course, they're a nationally carried magazine, and we're a little online thing, so it's night and day. It's not really a good comparison, I guess, to bash them for that. But this particular...
But it's got bills to pay, so...
Yeah, I guess that's true. Can't fault them for that, but I thought there was an obscenely large amount of them in this particular issue. I already started reading on the next issue, and it doesn't look as bad. So I'm going to chalk this up to, you know, this is, let's see, Volume 2, Issue 1. They were still early, they were still learning, so it's not, I guess it's part of the learning curve, the process of making the magazine better each issue. But other than the obscene amount of ads that they had in, the other thing was the articles themselves really felt like stuff that you could find or look up online. They had, for example, this was back in 95, there were still BBSs were very popular.
Right.
The internet was out, but still people were dialing into their local BBSs and playing online games, playing Doors games and trivia and all that kind of stuff was still popular back then. And every, you know, city had their BBSs come and go, and it was kind of hard to find them, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things they did here is they had... BBS listings. I think this particular one was Southern California. Yeah, Southern California, and I think I saw some 800 ones in there as well. But there were several pages of this taken up. If you live in South California, I'm sure you probably loved it. But I don't.
Right.
So I didn't. I thought it was just a real, real waste of space. I thought that was a lot of... And each issue, though, they do rotate through it. So the next issue may have, you know... South Florida BBS, the next one may have New York City BBS, the next one may have Phoenix BBS, et cetera, et cetera. So at least they rotated through it. I just thought they put a little bit more, took a little bit more space than they should have. They could have made the font a lot smaller and fit it onto one page or two pages or something and done pretty well. And as far as the articles themselves, it says the official Hacker's Magazine. So you'd expect hacking and loosely related hacking things.
Right.
Like phishing articles, technology articles, privacy, stuff like that. Something that a hacker would be interested in. And this particular one had an article in the back about UFOs.
And I guess they can hack too.
I'm like, I guess if I found one, I'd try to hack it or something to make, see if I could fly it or something, but I don't know. I didn't subscribe to a conspiracy theory magazine. I didn't subscribe to a UFO nut magazine. Sorry if I'm insulting someone with that. But it was just, I don't know, it seemed irrelevant. I don't know if they were grasping for articles. It's kind of weird, though. Their name is Blacklisted Information, Blacklisted 411, so that is a wide umbrella that can include a lot of things, you know?
So what was the UFOs about? I mean, it had anything to do with technology in any sense, or was it...
No, it was more the conspiracy theory and the history of here's where they were spotted. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't really. It was, you know, it was names and dates of so-and-so spotted this, but the government shut him up. And then this, yeah, it was very much a conspiracy theory and claims that were supposedly never denied by the government but never proven and hush-hush. And yeah, it was a conspiracy theory article.
Well.
And then the only article in there that was tech-related it was interesting. It was a good piece of reference material. And that is a list of AT modem commands, which I'm sure you have those memorized by heart, right?
I don't even use that anymore.
I know, right?
AZ, okay.
Yeah, ATDT. You know, attention dial tone. What do you... They have 13 pages of these AT commands. 13 pages. Now, they could be interesting. You may find yourself at a point where you want to look that up for some reason. Back then, anyway.
Right. And well, this was in 95, right?
Yeah, this was in January 95. So back then, yes, it might have been more...
That was practical.
But it still seems like something you would look up online, whether it was the internet or on a BBS, ironically. It didn't seem like something that would need to be printed up 13 pages in a magazine. I'd rather read some articles in different content instead of a reference manual or a reference magazine. But that's just me, anyway. That's my opinion. I thought they spent a lot of time on reference type things that could have been found elsewhere. I would rather have read articles and opinions and reviews and stuff like that. There were a couple little short reviews here and there, but I wish the magazine would have had more of that.
So it didn't really have an author? They just printed a list, 13 pages worth of AT?
Some of the articles in here did have an author associated to them, but others didn't even list. Like, here's one article in here that says, "What are they doing down there?" And it's got a couple pictures of a GTE phone truck, it looks like. Or, let's see. Going down into some manholes. It's just pictures that they've taken of this. And there's no author associated with it. I think it was just the editor of the magazine or the group that puts out the magazine or whatever putting their own material in. And maybe they're in the same boat as we are with BinRev right now. We're not getting any submissions from people. There aren't enough writers out there, so they were putting in their own stuff. This AT commands, the opening says, "Many of you have requested time and time again a complete listing of the AT modem command set, so we have decided to include one here in this month's issue, the full AT command set listing we've used with all of our modems." And then it just goes into this giant list. So it was compiled by them, you know, and it just seems like, again, something you would look up if you needed it, you know. But I guess there's something to be said. If you needed it, you grab your magazine, too.
Right. Quick book.
Yeah, I just personally thought that... I personally would have rather seen articles and opinions more than reference. That's just my personal opinion, I guess. But, like I said, I did already start reading the next one, which I think was Volume 2, Issue 2. I don't remember where my next gap was. And it, I could already tell, was a lot better. The ads, there were still quite a few ads, but it was less than this one. And it looked like it had more articles. And I've already started reading the first two in it. And they were, obviously they're old, they're dated. It was 95, 96, whenever, you know, and they're dated now. But they were well written, they were good at the time. So far the second one is better. So I'll probably have that read by the next episode of the show, and we'll talk a little bit about some of those articles.
Cool.
So, other than that, I also did... I think I talked about this on RFA before. Maybe one of the earlier episodes of BinRev Radio. that I'm going to try. See, this is a pet peeve of mine. I'm going to try to control my language here. It's a pet peeve of mine that these new grocery stores, and I think you might be able to back me up on this. Grocery stores have this plan, this program now, where they do these reward card deals where they want you to sign up and give them your information, your name and address, phone number, and all this information, and they give you a little card with a barcode on it so that every time you go to the grocery store, they scan your card and they'll give you like a discount on your groceries or something like that.
Right.
Do you have some of those?
Yeah, well, I have an Albertsons because I hate going to Winn-Dixie. I despise Winn-Dixie.
I do now, too.
But Albertsons, love Albertsons, actually. It's, the lines, at least where I go, the lines aren't as long. You get in, you get out, you get what you need.
And the stores are cleaner?
Yeah, much cleaner. I mean, Winn-Dixie is like a dump. Yeah. I despise it. I rarely go in there, but if I do go in there, it's just to maybe pick up something. I just don't feel like going to any other place. You know, it's right here quick. I can just pop in and get it.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
Yeah, I have the Albertsons I guess they call it discount card or preferred card. But with Winn-Dixie, I think it's called the same thing, preferred advantage card or something like that.
Yeah,
I can't recall.
Or I think it might just be called Winn-Dixie Rewards Card.
Right.
I think
right, that's what it is, yeah.
And for the listeners who aren't aware, Albertsons is a grocery chain down here in South Florida, and I guess throughout the Southeast.
Right.
So
even in up north in Georgia, North Florida,
Yeah,
they have Albertsons as well.
Yeah, probably throughout the Southeast, and so is Winn-Dixie. Frankly, they're as south and let's see. I know they had them as far north as Kentucky.
There too.
And I don't know how widespread. I assume this is a company-wide program. I'm sure this is not localized. I'm sure this is probably a company-wide program. And you can go to websites and find out more information on it. And I have done so, actually. But it's a pet peeve of mine because I hate the principle. And Winn-Dixie's especially. And frankly, I don't like Albertsons because of this too. I actually like Publix better than any of them. Or Publix, as I like to call them. But because they don't deal with that stuff. What I hate about Winn-Dixie especially is that the prices that they post in the store are the prices if you have a rewards card. Well, I don't want to give my personal information to them. I don't want to pimp myself out for a freaking 29-cent off fish sticks coupon. I don't think I should have to give my personal private information just to buy some freaking groceries. It's just asinine to me. I just can't stand the idea of it. So what I was in the habit of doing there for a while is going in and just filling out a fake name, or if you look closely, I think this was my tip on, I think it was RFA we talked about, but there's actually a little box in the fine print that says if you do not want to get for your information, circle this or put a check mark, and they would have to give you one without you filling out the form.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's the tip I gave. But I found a funner method. I found a funner or a more fun.
Okay.
I don't know what the proper grammar. Funner method or more fun method? Whatever, they get the point.
Or a hacker.
Yeah, I'm a hacker, not an English major. I found a method that was a lot more fun. That's better. I don't want to give that information, and I know it sounds corny, but I do have some morals. I don't want to give a fake name. I really don't like doing that. If I have to, I will, but I don't like it because it feels, wrong, for lack of a better word. Anyway, so what I do now is actually probably worse, frankly. It's just probably even worse. When I go in there, the way the card works is they use for a unique key. They're not going to use social because that would cause way too much of an uproar. What they use is your phone number. Your phone number is a unique identifier. They have to have a unique key to identify people. So they use your phone number. If you ever forget your card or don't have it with you or something like that, you can go into the store, and when they ask you for it, you say, "Oh, I forgot my card," and they'll ask you for your phone number. And they will type it into the cash register. Instead of the reward card number, they type in your phone number. It's probably the same thing, or they're related. One will look up the other. So you type in their phone, you tell them your phone number, and it will look up the card, and it will register you, and it will give you your discount, no problem. Well, when you fill out a fake card, I don't always remember the number I gave them the last time, so So that's why I said I went into a pattern of getting a couple different ones. Plus, I wanted to see the format of the card, the structure of how it looked, etc., so I could do some experiments on it. Well, I found a really, really fun trick. Did a little social engineering on the young lady that was working there. You flirt with a girl, and she's much more likely to give you a lot more information. So I was flirting with a cashier, just kind of smiling, you know, doing my thing. Not that I have a thing, but, you know, I was trying. And she mentioned to me, I told her I didn't have a card, and I said, you know, I gave her my number. I made up a number. I was like, oh, yeah, it's probably on. And then I said, oh, that's right, I moved, and I don't think I changed the number. I think that's the old number. I don't remember it. I just started making it up. And she said, I said, do you have a loaner card, or can I use your card, or something like that? And I noticed that she said, yeah, we'll go ahead and use the store card. And I noticed, you know what she typed in? She typed in the telephone number to that grocery store, the main number to that particular grocery store.
Wow.
And that seemed to be their official thing. They were allowed to do that. It wasn't a big deal. But she punched in that number, and I verified it because when the receipt prints out, it prints, you know, Winn-Dixie, blah, 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 main numbers, this pharmacy number, and sure enough, that was the number she put in for me.
Well, why would Winn-Dixie need a rewards card?
I guess it is their backup card. But here it gets, I'll tell you why they might be doing it. It might be a little underhanded trick. I might be outing them on this completely. What they do is, well, wait, before I go into that, let me tell you, one other thing I did the day after that is I was going up there and I was going to give them their own store number. I forgot my card, let me give you my phone number, and give them their own phone number to see if they'd even catch it, see if subliminally they type it in blindly and start scanning, or if they'd actually stop and go, wait a minute, that's our number. Well, in line, I couldn't help but overhear the line next to me. And the guy checking out the line next to me did the same thing. He didn't have his card with him, so the girl asked him for his phone number. And he gave what I assumed to be his real number. It's 9 characters. I mean, my memory's not great, but I could short-term memorize 9 characters. So I gave those same 9 characters to my cash register and went ahead and checked out no problem as well. So it's kind of a spin on the old shoulder surfing motif where you look over somebody's shoulder to find what their PIN code or something like that is. Just kind of overhear the person next to you giving that number, put it in your short-term memory, and pass that over and let it scan through.
All right. Well, the cards, I mean, I'm not sure other than getting a discount on meat or produce or bread or whatever they give you these savings on. I mean, I've never got any. Like I said, I have the Albert's card, but I've never received anything. I think we filled out two separate cards. The wife filled out one, and I filled out one. And she actually gave them her actual correct information when I actually circled. I prefer not to give out any information, but still would like to have the card.
Right.
And we've never received any, you know, coupons or any literature or anything. So I'm not sure what that whole thing really was about other than just receiving the card.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's all about market research. They're tracking what you buy, and if you buy a lot of a certain thing, they can track the trends of, oh, well, we seem to sell a lot of Quaker oatmeal down in this store, so we're going to start carrying more brands of Quaker oatmeal. We're going to start printing, I don't know if your Winn-Dixie does it, but at a lot of grocery stores, they'll print coupons on the back.
If
they know what sells well, they can go to Quaker and say, listen, guys, we've got targeted marketing, we've been tracking our users, and we know that they buy a lot of oatmeal down here, so why don't you buy some advertising with us, pin out coupons for your oatmeal so that you can do some more business. They make money off of information. Information always is valuable. Always. So they're tracking everything you do because they are going to make money off of it. Otherwise, why would they be doing it?
I see your point.
Yeah, so yes, worst case scenario, the possibility exists that they could sell it and you could get a bunch of spam snail mail, junk mail sent to your house. But I think they know that there's a fine line and they don't want to do that because it would raise an uproar. It would be crossing a line. So I think they know better than to go too far with it. But again, it's just the principle to me I don't like. But here's the funny thing. The other benefit of these cards, and you might not have seen it yet because you haven't spent whatever they're looking for, but whenever they want to run a promotion and sell more of a certain item or something like that, I noticed on the last receipt, let me see if I have it here. Yes, I have one right in front of me here. Let's see. Actually, this is funny. This is the one from the store where I gave them the store number as my rewards card number. And at the bottom it says, you have saved a total of, and the number's so big that it's only got room for 4.2, and it says 1,701.38. It's probably tens of thousands. It just didn't fit on the printout. You have saved this much with your customer reward card. But underneath of that, reward club points. It tracks, when you buy a particular item, it'll track how many points you got. And when you get a certain number of points, you get an instant discount or an instant rebate. Right under here, there's two of them on here. One for wine. Use your customer reward card and collect 100 points on wine and receive a $5 instant discount. So when you scan it and you buy that wine that pushes you over the point total, it immediately deducts $5 from you. And right underneath, here's another one. Collects 50 points. And let me see, did I buy a pet product? I bought cat food. So, underneath of that, down at the bottom, they knew I bought cat food, so they're trying to convince me to bring all my cat food return business to them, or pet products. If I collect 50 points on pet products, I get a $5 instant discount. Now, again, this was using the store's card. So there's a big advantage to using the store card because so many people are using it, and they're using it to just the default. Hell, I may use the store card and get a $5 instant discount while someone else did all the work.
Right.
So that's kind of a cool idea to use. That's kind of a cool little exploit of their system by using their store card. Or if you know a neighbor or somebody like that, it's kind of underhanded, I guess, but the possibility is if you know your neighbor buys a lot of dog food or something like that, or wine or whatever the case may be, give them the neighbor's phone number and get the discount, instant discount. You know, there's a lot of ways to exploit this system because of the fact that it's based on the phone number, which is public information.
Right.
Public information. Whether it's social or phone number, it's always, always a bad idea. So anyway, I'm going to type up a nice article out of that someday. I've been cutting and pasting and doing a lot of research online about it too, reading some of the formats and stuff like that. So I've gotten some notes down. I'm going to work an article out of it.
I think the next time I go to Iverson's, I might, I'll probably get the store number and see if it works that way.
Yeah, and they'll usually print it at the bottom of every receipt. And on your way in, you'll probably find receipts laying in the parking lot.
Oh,
find
yeah,
that number.
Bag, yeah, I'll probably go see what I can exploit at Iverson's.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all very, very similar as well. I'm sure they all are. So that's a good, nice, fun little topic there for anybody. And I'm sure that, like I said, this is probably company-wide, so any state that you're living, you can probably go out and use this information, play with it, see what you can find, and by all means, email us back and tell us if you find any good tricks or confirm that some of this stuff worked for you or any other stories like that. But, yeah, it's all about, they may not use the information to spam you with junk mail and stuff like that. They use that information to sell it to companies. That's where the money is. Nickel and diming the individual consumers, that's nothing. They want the money from the advertisers. That's where the money's at. So that's it for me for this week. The other thing that I was working on this week is probably something that you can talk a little bit more about, or we can both kind of talk, and that is, if the listeners might have noticed by now, I put up a link on VinRev.com under our member sites to FL2600. Now, regular listeners know, but if they don't, I am in the state of Florida, and our Florida 2600 group has had a pretty simple web page for a while and haven't had much demand, so the idea was bandied about that we needed to update the web page, make something a little bit nicer looking. So ZeroDB and I decided that, A, we wanted to learn a little bit more about it and get, you know, a little bit more experience in setting some of this stuff up. And I did have a new content management system that I was initially impressed at that I wanted to try, and that CMS was E107. So we set that up on the site and proceeded to basically hack away at it. It's a MySQL database where the data is kept, and it's PHP, which is very common in content management systems, that combination of the two, that would basically tie it all together. So what did you think? Because you and I worked together through this process. first of all, generally, do you think the basic install from what we did, do you think the base install was, let me think, how should I word this? Did it have everything that we needed in the base install?
Well, the base install, actually, it gave me a little bit more because on my side I used PHP Nuke. And I understand that others had, you know, was not too thrilled with PHP Nuke, had problems, holes, exploits, and whatnot. But it rather went smoothly. But as far as the E107 content manager, it actually came with a little bit more than PHP Nuke as far as themes and everything, and it actually gave you a little bit more to choose from. The plugins that we tried, we probably used, what, all the plugins we could find?
Yeah, well, there were a lot of, like, selling online sales and stuff like that of stuff we really didn't need, so we didn't try some of those. But, yeah, we put in some stuff that was directly related that we thought was interesting, like the virus news feed that you added some news feeds that were really good from Sophos.
And some others. Root Secure.
Right, Root Secure, which kicked that back to the beginning. Nick 84, who sent us that opening, that's his site. Great, great site, RootSecure.net. I can't pimp that out enough.
Right. Yeah,
so we added his news feed. Yeah, we added his news feed on there. But it came with, let's see, it came with a polling system.
Down
came
there.
With... what do they call that chatting? What was that little chat module?
Yeah, a little chat box.
Yeah, chat box. That's right. It came with the chat box built in. Those two things seem to be pretty standard on every content management system I've ever seen. It came with integrated forums. Now, some of them have that, but some of them don't. And I thought it was nice that they were integrated instead of having to install separate forums. So that, I liked the fact that it came with that. Now, I understand that some people out there don't like forums, but I think forums integrated into the site makes everything in one quick-stop location, a convenient location.
It's just a simple click away rather than switching screens and go to the email. But, I mean, that's cool, too, but I like the incorporation of the forums.
Right, and the fact that the member, to become a member and access, for the most part, members or non-members are going to be able to access our site equally. I don't think there's any members only. There's a couple forums that are members only to post, I think.
Right.
But other than that, you can see just about everything else just from browsing to the site as an anonymous user. But the members system will... You only have to set up one account, and you get access to the forums, to the whole site, to any other things we add for members only. So you don't have to register in two or three different places. You don't have to create a forums account, and then a gallery account, and then this account, and then that account.
Right.
One account, which I liked.
Right. But, the calendar is very, very informative. It gives you everything of the events that's coming up as far as the 2600 meetings. And
yeah, that was a must-have.
The host meetings, or anything hacker-related, material we try to put there so any and everyone can see what's going on and what's coming up.
Yeah, I noticed you put on there the HOPE conference, and we can put the conferences on any of the conferences and stuff on there. The local Unix users group meeting we can put on there, stuff like that. That it was definitely a must-have, the calendar.
Right.
And that did come with a default install, which, again, is pretty standard, though. What it did not come with, one of the things that I added that I thought was a must-have, was a little extra feature, and it's a very precise thing. There was a little module add-on called, I think it was just upcoming events. Because the way the calendar works, it only shows you the current month. And I could have tweaked it to show future months, but that can get confusing as well. So somebody had written, and I wish I should have written down the name to give proper credit, but somebody had written a module, an add-on, that would look ahead on the calendar and tell you the next X number of events, the next five events on the calendar. So even though you may be looking at March, it'll tell you that because the 2600 meetings are the first Friday of the month, and it may sneak up on you, it may be on the first or the second. Next month it is on the second, as a matter of fact. Well, that module will put in there the next upcoming five events or whatever you set it for. And I thought that was great because you can look at the current month's calendar, but you could still see the events that were on the horizon, and they wouldn't sneak up on you. You could make plans if need be. People like you and I who work during the day and have to make plans and run out at night to meet, go to our meetings.
Right.
So that was definitely a must-have, and that did not come with it.
Right.
Is there anything else?
Yeah, don't forget your shoutcast.
Yeah, that did not come with it. That was an add-on. I hadn't thought of that. When I saw that, I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. There is a shoutcast module that someone had written. There were several radio modules, but they all did the same thing, basically. You can put in there a direct link to a shoutcast server, or probably any media server, frankly. And the module was nothing more than a drop-down list. It was very simple. And it actually I had to go in there and tweak it to add the different stuff that I wanted in there. So I had to go into the code, modify it. But basically, you just put a direct link to the stream and select it from the drop-down box. And when you do, it'll and click on the play button, and it will fire up your media player of choice and start playing that stream. So it came with some default radio stations, and I changed a few of them to what I thought would be more interesting and appropriate to hackers and the personalities of the people in our meetings. I know some people like techno and stuff, so I added some appropriate. But again, we can customize and change that as we see fit. I put DDP Hack Radio link on it so people can click on it from our website and directly pop open the browser. They don't have to leave. So I thought that was a great thing. But again, that did not come with the base install. That was another add-on that we did.
Right. And also, I think this is probably one of your nightmares. You're just about 10 seconds away from taking off the news feed. Get that to show on the front page rather than, I don't know why Z107 had it going to its own little page. Basically, the news feed, you click on the link and you type in whatever you want as a feed or whatever you're looking for, and it actually prints out every feed that corresponds to whatever you typed in that search. But it doesn't show it on the front page, which we want to try to have that on the front page by itself as a particular feed that we actually put in. And I'm not sure. I guess we have to do some hacking there to try to get it to point to the front page.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure we can do it. It was just so frustrating, and I got tired of dealing with it, so I put it off for when it wasn't totally required. And It's basically support for XML or RSS news feeds, and we have those, a couple of them, like we said, Root Secure, Sophos. I put a semantic module on there for virus news. Those go into a smaller tray, but this particular More News was the name of the module, would pull in a lot of news feeds. It was like a collection of different news feeds, and you could select them by category, so we could select the technology-related news feeds that were available from different sources. You could single out individual news feeds that you thought were appropriate to what would interest somebody on our page. And we just never got around to getting that completely working. Luckily for us, we have a member at our 2600 meeting, Mia Flux, who is an accomplished PHP programmer, and I spoke to him. He's going to try to help us out and make some changes to it. So that might be cool. We might get that up and running. And the other frustrating thing you remember was that damned
That stupid gallery.
That gallery, yes.
The image gallery.
I wish they would have
the doggone pictures for nothing. Not sure what the heck the problem was with that.
Yeah, I have seen some content management systems that have that built in. Gallery built in natively, just like this one. We were talking about how good it was to have the forum built in. This one did not. It was an extra plug-in, and it was just messy.
Yeah, it was a poor excuse for image gallery, really.
It was close to working. We got it almost working. It took some tweaking. It took me modifying some of the PHP code because some of the links were wrong. Some of the field names were wrong. And I got it almost working, but yeah, same thing with that. We'll put that off and add that at a later date. And then other than that, the rest of the stuff we put on was probably silly, unnecessary stuff. We put on a games module. I ended up playing, in the middle of working on it, I ended up playing like Frozen Bubble for an hour in the middle of the damn thing.
Bowling's my favorite.
And some Java, basically just pops open a Java window to play games. And I personally, I'm a statistics junkie, people know that. I like seeing the server stats and stuff like that, so I added some modules that just show me system uptime, that show me some system variables. Some of those we limited to admin only can view those, but some of them not as well. So any kind there's problems or errors, we can always look at some of the system stats and see what's going on. So those are always really handy. So And, of course, the babe of the day. We can't go without that.
Yeah, that green fishnet. Not sure what she has on, but
yeah, that was that might have crossed the line. We might have to be careful with that one.
But she's a babe now. Don't get me wrong.
Definitely, but I don't know. There's a little peekaboo happening. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, hey, I'm not complaining.
There's a little peekaboo going on there. I don't want some 13-year-old kid to come across our site and get in trouble. So we might have to rethink that. Maybe we'll make, instead of the babe of the day, we'll make the tech equipment of the day or something. I don't know. We'll hack it a little bit.
We'll edit the image file and put something change the title or something. We'll do something.
Yeah, it'd probably be very, very, very easy to hack it to pull images out of a local folder that we could control. That way we don't cross any lines. So that's probably on our list of things to do. But for right now, I'm looking at the chicks.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, do you have anything else you wanted to do? Do we leave anything out of... How about an overall? What do we think of E107 compared to other content management? Like you said, you use PHP Nuke or Post Nuke?
PHP Nuke, actually.
And see, I was horribly disappointed with PHP Nuke. I had nothing but headaches and problems. But you said you didn't have that kind of stuff.
It's a little bit of a... In my opinion, I think they could have done a little bit better job with actually making it a bit easier for the user to set up, because you actually have to go into the config file and set up like the database name, the host name, the super user, and point it to the correct directory or where you actually have the content manager located.
Right.
Once you get that done, it kind of falls into place after that, but that's really the hardest part, because I think they need to come out a little bit better paper or directions on how to really set it up to a T rather than just a general setup.
Right.
And it does take some sort of content manager knowledge. It takes a little bit longer if you're kind of new with it. But I think the E107 actually was clean from the start. Really not much of a go in and config to tailor. Pretty much set right up. So
yeah.
I think E107 is a little bit better, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I do like it better than Geeklog, which is the one I use for StankDog.com. Geeklog was good, don't get me wrong. It was decent, but I do think E107 was a little bit better, had more features to it. So far, I think that's probably the best one that I've used. I have a couple others I want to try. And again, the reason that I'm so critical of some of these or that I point this stuff out somewhat times is because the whole point of a content management system is to make it easier to maintain.
Right.
And if I have to jump through hoops to install it and set it up and debug it and rewrite their code and stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. It's open source, and that's what's great about it. You can do that. But at the same time, the whole reason I'm doing that is because I want to save time and make it easy to maintain the site. So kind of a catch-22 there, I guess, but...
it's all learning.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, regardless of, even if we decide to stick with this, I'm not sure if we're going to leave the site up with the E107 or not. At least we got the knowledge and experience. I learned a lot about PHP. E107, actually, coincidentally, E107.org was down, and I couldn't get the directions or any of the tech support from them, but there were some other sites out there, E107 Coders...
Right, E107coders.com, I believe it was.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was .com or .org, but we'll put a link to that up, too. But they had enough... Their help was more from the programming standpoint, though. But I was able to interpret that and kind of work backwards to figure out, where stuff was supposed to be going from the programming standpoint so that I could, from the user standpoint, think, okay, why isn't this working? If they put this to here and that to there... Oh, they forgot to do this, so I could fix and modify their code to make it work.
But this is part of the thing. I don't think you should have to do that, even though I guess they're the third-party modules or plugins.
Right.
You should be little to no extra configuration whatsoever with these things. They should just pop in and be run, which I believe, 40 to 50% are. They just went right in, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, most of them were. Half of them were.
Yeah.
And then there was
some. I guess we're hackers. We can do what we need to do with it.
You get what you pay for. All right. Well, we have to go into the rest of the show. I thought we'd try to finish out the rest of these 101 ways to save the internet that we've been going on for months now. This was from January 2004 of Wired Magazine, and we've been hitting a few of them during each show, and I wanted to try to put it to bed this time. So you feel up for banging through a couple of these topics? We'll go through them fairly quickly.
Sure, let's start.
All right. And we finished last time. We finished off on 83, and we're going to start 84. The last ones we did were Apple's to-do list, which were things that, well, the whole list in general are basically things about the internet that could be improved upon. The article is how to these ways to save the internet, basically make it easier, annoyances. Some of them are good, some of them aren't. So we just kind of go through them and talk about them and say whether we agree, disagree, talk about it a little bit. Maybe if people haven't heard of this stuff, explain some of these. So the last one we did was Apple, stuff directly related to Apple. So these are more general. We're going to start with number 84. And actually, I lied. I guess this is not general. This one's directed at eBay. And it says, leave all the old eBay auctions online. Now, I don't know if you...
I don't know about that.
Yeah, do you use eBay? Have you ever...
You know, just to search to see what the best price I can get, but I never actually went in and purchased anything.
Yeah, I've only done 4 or 5 things on eBay, not very much at all. So I'm not a big eBayer either. But what I did notice is, I go out there, and in doing my research, I want to see some of the historical information. I want to, if I find an object, I want to say, hey, has anybody ever bought and sold this in the past, and what kind of price did they pay? And is this person reputable, and what kind of things do sell and don't sell? And I did notice that they only keep, I couldn't tell you exactly how many, but they only keep a certain number of months of past transactions on the site. They'll be grayed out. Only the most recent, I don't know, 3 months I would estimate. I'm totally guessing there.
Yeah, well,
transactions.
You're talking about as far as the grade of the seller, you know.
Well, that's kept.
3-star, 4-star, you know.
Yeah, that is kept. But no, the detail on the object itself. When you search a particular object and you bring up that page with all the details, this is what the object is, this is the size, how much it weighs, here's your where you actually bid on the item. Well, after the item closes, that object stays there. The auction's technically closed, but the page is still there, so you can go in there and kind of still read up about it. You may search, or you may go out there and say, oh, man, this auction's closed, but I wanted this just like this, so you look for a new one. So the actual content page of each individual article or each individual object is there, but they only keep them back for a few months. So, for example, if I wanted to see... I don't know, what's an obscure, some obscure piece of PBX equipment. And I wanted to see if this particular person has ever sold it. This guy has one for sale. And I'm thinking, wow, should I buy it now? Maybe the guy sells these all the time, and I should just be patient, wait for a better price. You click on him to see all of his past auctions, and they only show the past 3 months. It sure would be nice to know, did he have one 4 months ago? And did he sell it for $10 and now this one's $500? Wouldn't that be handy to know?
Oh, yeah.
That's the kind of detail.
But, you know, they're gonna need a hell of a database.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned it because that's where I was going. There's a lot of data to store.
You're talking about terabytes upon terabytes.
Absolutely. That's a huge amount of data to store. And I think that's fundamentally the problem. However... kind of a segue mentioned what we mentioned earlier about the Winn-Dixie reward card. Data is incredibly valuable. Incredibly. Keeping that data, obviously as a user in the situation I just described, it would be handy. But you would think that eBay would keep that information. It might be worth it to buy those terabytes and terabytes of storage space because the tracking and the information that they could pull out of that and the trend analysis of what sells and what time of year... that kind of analysis is just invaluable. You can't put a price on that kind of information.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure they do actually have the database there. Maybe just the content, their content manager probably only allowing X amount of months. But I'm pretty sure that they have that in their database tucked away somewhere, you know, on backup or something like that, just in case someone comes back and say, oh, well, you know, you're suing this person for whatever, or, you know, you never know.
Well, that's a good
point,
yeah.
They're going to have that as a backup just in case something happens or goes wrong. Or
they're actually, yeah, that's a very good point. They may actually have legal requirements, governmental requirements, that they keep data for X number of years for tax reasons or lawsuit purposes, just in case, like you said. Yeah, very good point. Maybe they keep it and it's just not publicly available.
Right.
But from the slant of the way this is worded, they're saying, they're giving the impression that they throw it away. So I don't know that they do or not, but anyway, that's the principle, that's the point of the topic, so maybe we'll look into that and see, confirm one way or the other. Number 85, Archive the Net. Brewster Kahle can't do it all by himself. Now, Brewster Kahle, I confirmed this, I was pretty sure, but I confirmed it before the show, is the founder of archive.org. Fantastic, incredibly valuable site. It just absolutely required if you want to own somebody. Definitely a great tool. But just what you said a moment ago, archiving the net, it's going to take terabytes upon terabytes to archive eBay alone,
right?
Let alone archiving the entire internet. That is a very extremely ambitious project, to archive every page on the internet historically. I mean, can you imagine? And every page that comes up for a day or two or 3 months or whatever and then goes down.
Wow.
I mean, that's a lot.
Can't even imagine that.
It's mind-boggling. And then, you know, why would you store it if it wasn't going to be accessible and searchable? And the system, let's say they actually had a huge, they did a bulk discount and ordered tons of hard drives and had just all the space in the world they needed. Then you have to write a system to search through it and parse through all that data and index all that data. It's just, the logistics of that are, that's very, very ambitious. That's all I can say.
I can't fathom that. That's like, I mean, rest alone, say if you have someone with 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 bookmarks, that's not even a 16th of the internet or 1/32nd of the internet. I mean, it's just,
you can't
imagine archiving the whole internet.
Yeah, and you know, you got to give a little bit of, you got to give a little respect, give a little nod to sites like Google. It's not only about storing all of that information. And Google has cached copies. They have somewhat of an archive, you know.
Right.
Google has cached copies of pages, but mostly just the database of the links, keywords, backwards links. They keep a lot of information in each entry. But that's not all of the work. It's not just keeping it and storing it. It's making an efficient and easy-to-use way to access said information. I mean, it's not nearly as easy as people think to find a needle in a haystack.
Right. They even know. I mean, you got all the robots out there, you know, spiders to do these things. But if they, you know, people are basically have it where you can't go to a specific directory, then it's not truly archiving the whole internet per se. You know, depending on how they go in and get the sites.
Yeah, I think basically the thing to say about the summary of this is, yes, it's possible, but very, very ambitious, very, very difficult.
More
difficult than they seem to make it in this blurb.
Very difficult. But don't they have something, gosh, I'm like kind of off the top of my head here, but didn't they have a optical drive, I think they call it? You could fit a great amount onto this drive. I think they call it an optic drive or something like that.
Yeah, there's so many new technologies of people trying to come up. I mean, I don't even know if possibly those micro drives would be. There's so much technology that, yeah, they need to come up.
Well, I'm sure they got something that I'm pretty sure the Japanese have something like that.
Yeah, they're always.
No, the U.S. doesn't have.
Exactly.
It could fit probably half the internet on one drive or one chip. Or
yeah, exactly. And you can put it in your back pocket and walk around with it.
Right, right.
All right, let's go. Number 86 here. Take over the MPAA Keanu. Keanu Reeves, a picture of the one. And it says, only the one can end the war between fans and the movie industry machine.
Well, you're probably going to laugh at me. I still haven't seen The Revolution.
You haven't? Oh, man. Dude, you're
missing
out.
I'm waiting for it to come out.
The reviews on that were so mixed. I'll bring it to the next meeting. Remind me, I'll bring the DVD to the next meeting. So, well, wait a minute. That's not on DVD yet.
I don't think it's out yet.
Yeah, that's number two. I have one and two.
Yeah,
yes,
I got
three.
One and two. But three, I was going to go, but I couldn't really find the time to get over to the doggone movie code and watch it. But
yeah.
I said, oh, well, hell, I just wait, because I did read the reviews, and it was, like, kind of mixed. Oh, it sucked, and then some say, well, no, it was pretty good. You know, so I was like, well, dang. You know, I'm kind of, like, caught in the middle here. But.
Yeah, there were definitely mixed reviews on it, but my opinion is I thought it was fantastic. And one of the episodes, Rax and I did a review, I think, and we talked into some detail. You'll probably ruin the movie listening to it. It might give some of the stuff away, but I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great. I thought number two was really good, and a lot of people didn't like that one.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess it's that first impression that really gets you going. Nothing better than Matrix 1, first
yeah.
part. And then when it comes to part two, it was like you expect, you know, I guess you have this want for something bigger and better, but it really got into the story, you know.
Right.
And the part three I hear mostly it was fighting. So,
yeah, it was a lot
but
of
But I don't know. I'm going to check it out, and I'm going to
I mean,
my own conclusion and
yeah,
see what's up.
It's no Lord of the Rings, don't get me wrong. It's no Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is the most fantastic series of movies in my life that I think I'll ever see in my lifetime.
I did go to see that. I love the best character. Who's your best character?
Oh, they were all great, but I mean, Strider was badass.
I love Gollum.
Oh, Gollum, of course, was everybody's favorite, but, dude, Strider was badass.
Loves and hates.
So, but Legolas was cool as hell, too.
Yeah, Legolas.
In the first movie,
dude,
in the first movie, when Legolas pulled the arrow out and stabbed the one dude in the forehead and then whipped it in and shot the other dude the same arrow, dude, that was just, it's just one word, badass. That's all there was to it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I like part, actually part two, I think Return of the King was actually, it was well done.
Yeah.
Well
whole,
done.
It was all very well done. And very ambitious project was that as well, because if you know how, like comic book movies, when they come out, if you don't do it exactly the way comics, boy, those comic fanboys will just eat you alive.
That's right.
They just will get on you. And boy, to mess with a classic like Lord of the Rings, I took a course at University of Louisville, actually, where we read these books. We read that series along with some other things, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, some other fantasy literature books. And, I mean, these books are so revered and so fantastically written, you can't screw these up.
Right, right.
Man, he would have just been blacklisted for life, but my God, did he do a wonderful, wonderful job on them.
Peter did an excellent job.
Yeah, absolutely. He earned and deserved every award that he got at the awards. What was it, last week? Yeah. Maybe 2 weeks ago when this airs. All right, we're running real
fast. We got off track.
Yeah,
here.
Let's
where
shoot through here. Well, let's see. The 86 was that. First of all, we got on a tangent about movies, but the original thing, take over the MPAA, only the one can end the war between fans and the movie industry. That's dumb. That's just a joke. I don't know what. That can't be serious. I think that's just a silly little joke they put in there. So I'm not even going to pay that no.
I think someone had a beef about trying to burn DVDs or something. I don't
nah,
know.
Yeah, that's so. All right, now number 87. Here's a little section. It says your to-do list, meaning you as a listener, as the reader. These are the things that you can do to help out the internet. Number 87. Switch your ISP. Some offer anti-spam and antivirus tools and support. If your current provider won't help you defend yourself, find another that will. And I agree with that. I think that's great. If you're content to let them give you the minimum, guess what they're going to give you? The rock-bottom minimum. So
that's right.
Demand more as a consumer, and you will get more as a consumer. That's just being proactive. I agree with that one.
But I hear, heard, I think, in the news, I think it was yesterday, about the Japanese, they have, you know, they have a bunch of anti-spam laws and stuff like that, but they still get close to like 30 spams per day per email, even with the anti-spam laws in place. So I'm not even sure if, you know, this spam is really gonna go away.
No, it's not. It's never, it's never gonna go away completely, but it can be limited and controlled somewhat.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a topic we've beaten to death on many, many occasions. It's never gonna go away.
Right. Yeah, just put your own filters in place and send them to the trash as you get them.
Yeah, and just deal with it. Use a local filter. Let your mail, your ISP, make sure they have a filter, and that's all you can do.
Right.
Number 88, change your screen name. Is your screen name the same as your email address? Are you getting spammed? Duh. Well, yeah, I guess that's kind of a valid point. I mean, if your account name, if you have a Yahoo account, then, yeah, that screen name's the same as your Yahoo account email address. So, yes, that is a common spammer trick, and that's why Hotmail and Yahoo and those type sites get the most spam of anything. They know what the standards are. They know that it's the same, so they target those. So, sure, you can get a different AIM screen name, if that's what they're insinuating, or an instant message name different than, you know, whatever your account is, but some of that's out of your hands because, like I said, the ISP or the online company controls that, so you might not be able to change that all the time. Good thought, but not quite.
Yeah, isn't that what one of your rants was about the
I have so many.
Killing instant messenger with all the ads and
That bombshell I dropped last week's show just made me so mad. Yeah, that's... Don't get me back on that again.
Yeah, well, well, they're probably responsible, so, well,
yeah.
Whatever.
Number 89, demand privacy reports. Push companies to reveal the info they have on you and with whom it has been shared, the privacy version of a credit report. I don't know about that one. What's your take on that?
Well,
I'm all about privacy.
Trying to request these privacy reports for, I mean, why, you know, what's the demand about? Why would you? I mean, if an ISP has a privacy policy in place, you would think they would adhere to the privacy policy. Now, to demand privacy report, I'm not sure what's up with that.
Well, that's like they equate it to a credit report. I mean, obviously they have the reason for hesitation here. My concern would be, obviously, they should only reveal that information to you about you. You shouldn't be able to. You have to be careful that you can't let other people access that information because that becomes a violation of your privacy. So I agree with this, but you'd have to be very careful in implementing something like this. If my ISP has information on me, I think I should have the right to say, okay, what do you have on me? Tell me. What are you reporting to other companies? Just like I think I should have a right to go to Winn-Dixie and say, listen, I've got your damn rewards card. I know you're tracking everything I buy and all that kind of stuff, and I want to confirm it, see it for myself. Give me a list of every bit of information you have on me. And more than likely, they've got pages upon pages, data files of you bought this on this date at this price, you bought this on this date at that price, you cashed this coupon on this date. They probably have all that, and I think if they've got it, then you should have a right to it. It is your information. But I think they just have to be careful in how they deliver it.
I don't know if I would even bother with requesting that. I mean,
well, I just made up that example because it was on topic of what we talked about. But how about an airline? Airlines are screening and looking at a lot of information. Kind of another topic we might have talked about tonight, but we're not going to have time. Airline keeps a lot of information on the people who fly because they want to watch out for, quote, terrorists, unquote. And I think I have a right to know what they're watching. If they think I'm suspicious because I walked on with a laptop and they have a little asterisk next to my name, I think I should have a right to know that.
Well, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what they're alluding to.
Okay.
So, But again, it has to be, if they're thinking they're just going to give you some online form to fill out, anybody can access that and request someone else's information. That's too dangerous.
Right,
you have to show some credentials, prove who you are, et cetera, et cetera.
I would think if you got a little red dot next to your name, they're probably going to be knocking on your door in the next 24 hours anyway.
Quite possibly.
So, well, I didn't have time to even demand one, but,
You know, I tell you what, number 90, this might be a good one for you. I'm interested in what you have to say about 90. Death to fax machines.
Well,
send us an attachment instead.
Well,
anything that
I can't. I'll say this about fax machines. There's nothing worse than spam fax. I'd rather spam email than spam fax. Because it first of all, you spend the money for the damn cartridge, which is not cheap. They spam you with these faxes. Before you know it, by the end of the day, you have maybe 30 to 40 sheets of paper all over the damn floor and on the desk that's from spam. And it's like, okay, I think I'll just turn this damn thing off.
Right.
And or block the damn the number, or just get rid of the damn fax machine, because it's really... really getting bad with the spam with the fax machine.
Yep. Absolutely. Anything that you can fax, can you send as an attachment generally?
As an attachment?
Yeah. Can you attach just about any document to an email? So why? What would you need a fax for?
Right. Well, I guess for quick stuff. But even if...
I guess if you had a printed...
You're sending it out of fax through a regular PC, wouldn't that attachment come out in plain text, or rather than, I mean, there's really no, to my opinion, I mean, I don't have a broad knowledge of fax machines other than, okay, you fax and that's it, but
right.
As far as attachment is concerned, I'm not sure.
I guess if you had, the only thing I can think of is if you had a printed document that you didn't have stored in a, you know, in a format, a doc or, you know, a PDF or anything. You just had the printed form, handwritten or signature or anything like that.
Right.
You know, that's something where you'd see a fax coming in, but I think it would be just as easy to put it on a scanner, scan it into a PDF format, and send it as an attachment just as easily. But everybody doesn't have scanners, so... But I do agree that the time of the fax has come and gone.
Right.
I mean, that's just... They're great to send, but they're horrible to receive. Now, I thought they did pass, actually, a law about spam faxes. That there was actually a thing that would fine people if they, for that exact reason. It uses your toner, it uses your ink. It's a harassing phone call that you're getting without permission. I thought they did pass a law on that a few years back.
If so, they're not adhering by it.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, and that's why so many people are skeptical of the Do Not Call list.
Right, well, that's the next thing. I never bothered to even consider putting my name on that list because I really don't know. Really, you know, it's even putting my information, to me, putting my information out there even more.
And a lot of conspiracy theorists say that.
Yeah, I really, when I first heard that, I was like, well, I don't know, you know. And then this list goes to different companies to don't call. As well, you know, but... I don't know. My name still isn't on the list. Actually, I invite telemarketers to call. So, I just put on listening music. I tell them to hold on, put on listening music, or, just give them the run around and try to social engineer them.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard my telephonic craptacular. I really have a good time with them.
Yeah, I enjoy their company.
Yeah. enjoy their company. That's a good way of putting it. number 91, stop with the jokes. If we get the one about French military victories one more time, we're going to come over and unplug you personally. You know what? That's a little subtle. Do you get that one? The French military victories. Do you know what joke that is? If you do a Google search for French military victories, I think it comes up with something like "no pages found" or something like that.
No,
I think that's an old
one.
Yeah, it's because there weren't. Yeah, it's kind of a little joke.
But stop saying.
Yeah, that's another silly one. I'm not even going to address that. I like getting occasional jokes, but yeah, you get the same one over and over again. That gets old.
A pitch against the French, or like freedom fries and all that nonsense.
Yeah, more of that stuff. Number 92, turn off your HTML email. It makes you vulnerable to viruses and bugs us. Well, forget the bugs us. I don't care about that. Vulnerable to viruses by reading HTML email. I don't know. I guess it does a little bit, but not. I still don't think the problem is that it's HTML in and of itself. It's that people click on things they shouldn't click on. That's the big key.
Right, I would think it has a little bit more to do with enabling probably Java or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you put Java and stuff in an email, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, but let's, I don't know if that's going to help a whole lot. I don't think it's going to make a big difference in, quote, save the Internet. Not going to happen.
Most people are going to click on open this attachment anyway, even though they don't know who it's from. And if they're to get a virus, they'll get it that way.
And, you know, funny we said that because I don't look ahead on these as we go through. I'm reading them and improvising here. But number 93 is, don't open it. When you get a suspicious-looking email attachment, resist the urge to click. All right, so we just talked about that, too. So, number 94... tell Kelly on GeoCities to take down her Macarena tribute page. It's over, Kel. Now, they're obviously alluding to a bunch of worthless pages out there that have silly, dumb stuff on it. I don't agree with this at all. Because what's silly to one person may be incredibly cool to someone else or very valuable to someone else. So I think that's... I mean, they use the Macarena tribute page as a joke, but I don't know. I'm not going to tell people what they can and can't put on their page. I think that's kind of insulting, actually. I don't agree with that at all.
Right.
Because somebody could say that our pages are, you know, guess what, FL2600.com? It's over. Take your page down. No one cares. No, screw you. I care. I got to have my babe of the day.
That's right.
Number 95. All right, now see, even if I wanted to get through the episode without cussing... That's not fair, is it? That's not fair at all. Number 95 says, quote, protect yourself, dumbass. I didn't say it. It's on the paper. Download security and virus patches at Microsoft.com/protect, which some would say is an oxymoron in and of itself, but Microsoft security. But, yeah, that's I don't think we need to spend any time on that either because we've talked about that a lot, so let's jump over that one. Gosh, let's hit these last six real fast. We're almost done. Number 96. These are back to some more general topics now. 96. Blanket airports with Wi-Fi. There are more Centrino ads than hotspots. How about covering check-in lines, gates, baggage claim, and the restrooms? Well, I don't know about the restrooms. That could get really... There's a disgusting joke that I don't want to even go there.
Well, you might even look suspicious if you go in there with your little laptop... In an airport.
Yeah, and you know, and there shouldn't be anything suspicious about that, but unfortunately, I guess there is. I mean,
yeah.
We got to accept fact, right? Deal with reality. Don't right, like right. it, but yeah, they're going to...
Walking around with any kind of electronic device.
Unless you're in a if you're in a shirt and tie, then they won't give you a second look.
Right.
Yeah. Number 97, celebrate diversity. With nearly every computer on the planet running Windows, Outlook, and Explorer, it's too easy for a single virus to spread everywhere. It's another thing we've gone into in great detail. I don't think we need to go into detail about that. We've talked many times about how they own the majority of desktops in the world, and I think that's something we've beaten to death also. 98. Add a skip all flash intros option to Macromedia Player. Now, that's obviously a jab at... For a while there, and even still, people had a tendency to make their first index page a flash animation. Does that bug you? Apparently, that's a pet peeve of a lot of people.
Well, actually, if I do see the skip link, I will click it.
Right, so do I.
The Mars rover page from NASA,
mm-hmm.
They have quite a neat little Macromedia intro. And, you know, I let that play through because I'm somewhat intrigued by space. And
yeah, I go backwards.
There, you know.
I go backwards sometimes and view it after I've gone into the page if I'm interested.
Right.
But apparently a lot of people don't like it, and it's considered poor form, I guess, for you to... Because a lot of people still are on dial-up. And, you know, that could bog down downloading all that stuff, so...
Just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Right.
Number 99, hire Tom Ford to design Dells. Just look what he did for Gucci. I have no idea what to say about that. Is Tom Ford the guy who does Gucci? I don't even know who that is.
I guess some female out there wants her Dell to look like a Gucci bag. I don't know.
Alligator skin. And actually, that might look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, pimped out...
case,
leopard,
keyboard.
Yeah, furry leopard covered case. Number 100. Dear Mr. President, whatever you're doing to make cybersecurity czarists quit, stop it. I guess they've come and gone so much, they're just blaming the president. I don't know that we should really go into much detail on that. We try to avoid getting into the political environment here. We're all about the tech, so I don't think we're going to touch that. Number 101, the last one, finally. Madonna, the EFF needs you. Oh, God, I don't even want to read the rest of that. No, they don't. Nobody needs you. Nobody needs you. Do you like Madonna? Am I insulting you? I hate Madonna.
I'm not even going to, I look at her and then I look away. It's not really, even 10 on my list.
She's what we call an attention whore. I'll leave it at that. I don't have a whole lot. I have some respect for Madonna for what she's accomplished. I'll give you that, but I don't particularly care for her a whole lot.
All right.
Well, man, we are probably a good bit over, so let's wrap this up. We finally finished that list, which is great, so thank you for helping me with that. And let's just jump into the shout-outs. Me, I have a couple quick ones. First of all, March Madness is here. I have my dumb shout-outs. People make fun of me for my sports shout-outs, but I got a shout-out to my alma mater, the University of Kentucky, Big Blue, number one overall seed in the tournament. So shouts to them. Good luck to my alma mater. Let's see how far they can go. And I have to give shouts to Voodoo Hal for helping me with a project over the weekend. Was very, 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 very successful. And we'll be writing that up, and hopefully you'll be reading about that in the future. He knows what it is. He's probably laughing listening to this right now. So that's it from me. Did you have some shout-outs you wanted to throw?
Right off the top of my head, shout-out to you for having me on the show. Like you said, this is first time on any show, really.
You did great. You're actually very good, so you don't have to shout me.
I think it went pretty good for my first time. Sure I could make it a little bit better. Informative maybe the next time around if you decide to have me.
Hey, look, we've gone well over an hour, so we must have done something right.
Yep.
So.
But other than that, again, shout out to you. Thanks for having me, and hopefully we can continue to get that sat under our belt and get it good and get it solid.
And a shout, you know what, to Pytus 26. How about that?
That's right.
Shout out to him, FL 2600. And let's see, what else? Oh, closing music today is going to be from Compressor, since he just came out with some new tracks, a new album. Thought I'd play an old track. I like Compressor a lot, and I've never played his music closing the show, so this is the first time, and my favorite track of his, Adding Up Numbers, hilarious. I think it's a great track, catchy. So I'm going to close with that. Email us anything you want to confirm, correct us, question us, whatever. radio@benrev.com, and I'm going to remind again to submit articles for Binary Revolution Magazine 2.2. We are want to get started on that early, so we need people to start sending those articles in ASAP. Don't wait. If you've got an idea, if you've got an article, please send it to us now. We want to get it started and try to get it out quicker next time, so send it to articles@benrev.com. Whether it's an article, artwork, Photoshop, something for cover submission, anything like that, send it to articles@benrev.com. And that is it. So thank you, ZeroDB, for being on the show. And by all means, I know you're active in the forums and have been posting a lot of great stuff out there. So everybody knows that they can contact you on there if they want to follow up with stuff. And I think that's it. We'll close it out. What do you say?
Okay, I'm ready to go.
All right, man. Well, we tell them at this point in the show that we will see them next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Peace out.
Later.